This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Democracy, when we talk about it in the modern context, usually refers to a form of governance for a nation state. There are regular elections based on majority rule and with parliaments where elected representatives debate and decide on laws. These laws, at least in theory, apply equally to all and are enforced by the state. While this may be the usual notion of modern democracy, it is not the only one. Many modern social movements have grown in explicit rejection of this kind of democracy. Based on consensus process and a deep respect for autonomy and diversity, the kind of democracy these movements practice is often referred to as participatory or horizontal. As an activist and scholar, Marianne Mickelberg has actively engaged in and researched these kinds of democratic processes, particularly as she practiced in struggles against neoliberal globalization. She has written a book, The Will of Many, How the Alter Globalization Movement is Changing the Face of Democracy. And Marianne Mickelberg teaches at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, and we've reached her on the phone in Belgium. Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
What is horizontal decision making? Where does it come from?
Well, it's a long history, actually. Of course, there's no starting point for when people started coming together to make decisions about their lives without any sort of hierarchy. But within the contemporary social movements, so within Occupy, within the May 15th movement in Spain, it has a very specific history. That's most recent predecessor is the alter-globalization movement, which is also often indeed called the anti-globalization movement. And they're the people who are protesting against the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the IMF over the past 10 years. And before that, these decision-making processes were really quite elaborately developed within anti-nuclear struggles, within feminist movements, was very important in developing this consensus, horizontal way of interacting and taking political decisions.
How does horizontal democracy differ from the type of representative democracy as seen in modern nation-states?
Well, there's quite a lot of ways in which it differs, but some of the really important ones are that it's based on a set of network structures rather than nation-state structures. And what that makes possible is when you're just making decisions through networks, you don't have the same necessity of centralization that you have with a nation-state. So in a nation-state, the democracy that we have is very much based on us all being unified in a geographical area, and often actually with a lot of shared cultural and national assumptions and identities. And then anyone who doesn't fit within that framework, within those identities and those assumptions, is excluded and is alienated. With a network structure, it's much more diffuse, and so you can have a whole series of different hubs and clusters, different groups of people that work together and are in communication with each other and coordinate with each other, but they don't necessarily have to share the same aims, assumptions, goals.
Now, horizontal decision-making relies heavily on the notion of process. What do you describe as process, and why is it so heavily emphasized?
Yes, so within these networks, process becomes a sort of guiding set of principles. So although everyone is in different groups and it's a network, so sometimes people are very tightly linked and sometimes very weakly linked, there are sort of set of usually called guidelines, but really I think we can call them rules, that govern how decisions are made. And what's important about the rules is that they are quite flexible and open, because for a lot of the people who are involved in these movements, one of the reasons they get involved is that they want to have more say in their own lives, in determining the most important political and economic decisions that end up affecting all of their life's possibilities. So that moment of being able to have more say in the rules that govern our own lives is very important for them. So process is this idea that yes, there are rules and guidelines that govern the way we have to interact with each other, but that those should remain flexible and open so that we can collectively decide what those rules should be and when it might be necessary to change those rules.
Are there some underlying principles, I guess, or practices that make sure that things continue to move forward? Because for all of those of us who've been involved in processes, or, you know, heavily kind of processed interactions, you can also end up, you know, not moving forward if you spend too much time on process. So are there some kind of unifying fundamentals that help people to kind of move through a discussion in a way that's productive?
There certainly are, and it is true that they aren't always applied or equally effective depending on the places where these decision-making mechanisms are practiced, and of course also depending on the people and the size of the group and all of these different factors that are of influence. None of the factors mean that the process can't work, but it does mean that sometimes the process needs to be adjusted or changed depending on the circumstances. And I think one of the most important things, one of the most important structures that I've seen developed by within these decision-making processes is attitudes and approaches for dealing with conflict, because conflict tends to be the thing that makes the process fall apart. And if the structures aren't in place for dealing with conflict, then a lot of people who are there will get demotivated or feel like, well, there's no room to move ahead, as you say, with this process. So often you see these structures being developed, and one of the most important ones is to incorporate conflict rather than exclude conflict, because inclusiveness is very important. So behind all of these assemblies that we see at the Occupy sites or in the Alto-Globalization movement, the large meetings where everyone is there, behind that is actually a whole series of working group meetings, decentralized network meetings, sometimes neighborhood meetings. And it's actually at those sites where the discussions happen and then the proposals are prepared and then brought to the larger meeting. And the larger meeting, one of the most effective structures I've seen is that when the larger meeting says, okay, we have a conflict now that actually needs a lot of discussion, and not everyone here is interested in this discussion, well, let's take the discussion back to the working group and the people who we now can know who it is that has the conflict, who needs to, what issues need to be incorporated into this proposal to make it a stronger and better proposal, and then those people can sit separately and work out the proposal and then bring the proposal back to the larger meeting. That's one of the best structures I've seen so far for actually incorporating conflict into the decision-making process. And then you'll see when that's done, rather than hours of discussion and debating on a topic that maybe doesn't even interest many people, you end up having a much better proposal at the end of the process, and everyone just has to listen to that one proposal being presented and either approve it or go back to the drawing board in some cases.
Within the Occupy movement here in North America and in other uprisings around the world, horizontal decision-making processes has experienced a dramatic growth in use, you know, in a sense, a revival of some of the earlier expressions of it. What challenges are people facing as they try to take these techniques and adapt them to their local contexts?
It's been very interesting, I think, to see the kinds of problems that emerge when I was researching these processes in the Alto-Globalization movement. They were sort of disembedded. It was a group of people who went all over to summits and social forums and had these meetings in this almost imaginary space that was just created for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And now what we see is these decision-making processes are being grounded in localities all over the world. And what happens then is you get a lot more very practical questions about resources. How are we going to allocate resources? You get the problem, often in the Alto-Globalization movement, the best way to resolve conflict was to divide up time and space. What I mean by that is, let's say they wanted to take an action, but they couldn't agree on which action to take. Well, then they would just say, okay, if the timing is very important, then we'll split up the space and everyone will take action in different places. Or if the location is very important, then we can take action at different times. Some people go in the morning, other people go in the evening, or split up different days. And this worked very well, or often worked, maybe very well as an exaggeration, worked for the Alto-Globalization movement. But when you're in an actual neighborhood and you're working with people you've known for 10 years or 20 years, or people that you're going to have to see every day for the next ideas and you're working on long-term projects, these kinds of solutions don't always work. So we find that a lot of the, on the one hand, resources are able to be mobilized and social relationships are able to be mobilized that already existed, which is an advantage. But sometimes these pre-existing relationships also really get in the way of people being able to see things in a new way and break through their own perspective to try and incorporate other people's perspectives into the proposal or the campaigns they're working on.
To what degree, Marianne, do you think that these forms of democracy are capable of replacing more traditional forms of representative democracy or global governance?
I think that they're certainly, I mean, they're theoretically capable. Of course, the question of all of the centralization of power, economic power, political power, that would come in the way of this ever actually replacing representative democracy is an enormous and important question. Before the crisis, it seemed as if it was even impossible to enter into a dialogue about whether this current economic system was problematic or not. Now that is another question. People are looking for alternatives. People are looking for other ways to envision the economy and to envision politics. So I think there's an opening. But I think there needs to be still a lot of work done on making these processes more empowering for people. In some locations, it works incredibly well, and then you think, wow, yes, this process could definitely replace representative democracy. And then you go somewhere else, or I go and I see and I think, in this location, there's some reason that isn't working, that people aren't able to relate to each other in the way that they need to be able to relate to each other for this process to work. On the other hand, it really is a gradual process. So I don't want to say that because it hasn't worked yet, that doesn't mean it could work. It can't work. We have to actually really reconfigure the way we relate to economics, the way we relate to each other, a lot of our political assumptions, and you see that happening. I often see people transform the way they understand themselves and their relationships to each other in this process. It's an enormously powerful political progression, but I think there's still a long way to go.
Well, in a sense, I probably asked the question of, like, what would you, you know, taking that giant step when really, I guess the important thing is how can we take baby steps to kind of foster, these more horizontal democratic processes?
Yes, I think if they are going to replace existing structures that we have, it will likely have to be a gradual process, because we have to learn, we still have so much to learn, and everyone has to learn how it works, and it's not something that can be imposed on others from within the process. That's a contradiction, because the process is supposed to be horizontal, so it's not something you can just declare the new system.
Well, it's been very good talking with you this morning. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Marianne Michaelberg is a lecturer in cultural anthropology and development sociology at Leiden University in the Netherlands. She has 15 years' experience as an activist, organizing, and facilitating. Her book, The Will of Many, is available from Pluto Press, and she maintains a website at globalUprisings.org.